Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington. I have my good buddy Mark sitting in with me today. How's it going?
I'm doing awesome, Doug. How are you?
I'm having a good day. I was pumped to have you come over. You recently moved to Longmont, and I think you've been here for a little while, but I've been slightly busy slash detached from like social activities a little bit, and I haven't seen you, but how's the move going?
Well, the move is going great. I actually bought the house in November, but I was away, so I bought it as an absentee owner, I guess you would say. Mindy and my daughter actually closed on it for me, which was great. But I've been here really full time since in January, but I kind of been traveling, as we'll probably talk a lot about.
Yeah.
And also, I do still have a foothold in Crested Butte. I have a little apartment there, so I've been going back and enjoying the skiing and, yeah, and teaching a little bit of the financial literacy class over there. So I haven't been around as much, but I will be around more often going forward.
Cool. All right. It's good to have you in town. Today, we're going to talk about non-frugal habits slash spending that we did, you know, in the last year or two. And basically, Carl and I, before we left the show, we had, I think, like a three-part series about how to like break away from some of our frugal habits, which many of us in the community have. We actually enjoy saving money and or getting a deal, which I still have. But as I think like maybe Die With Zero, 4,000 Weeks, plus the conversations that we're having in the community, essentially like certain people are trying to spend a little bit more money and in testing things to see like, is this valuable to me or is this a waste? And I think it's a good spot to be in. And like, I think you don't want to try to do this too early. Like if I did this in my 20s, then maybe I wouldn't have what I have now. So there's sort of a balancing act, but we're just going to have some fun and talk about things we spent money on. And you said you had a huge list.
Right? Oh my God. Yeah. I was going through the list last night. I was like, let me think about all the things I spent on. So I actually have a fun bucket. And I think we've talked about that before. Maybe you've heard about it. And the idea of that was, it came about as a friend of mine, Kevin Sebesta, suggested, you know, we were both retired. We had both been doing exactly what you said. You know, you kind of follow the 4% rule. Well, maybe it should be 3%. Maybe it should be 2%. And when we started our retirements, we were spending way under what we could. And you're always worried about that sequence of return, right? You know, am I going to have a bad sequence? But what happened was we were both pretty much like 5 years into our retirement. Not only did we not have a bad sequence, but we had a good sequence. And then you start saying, okay, well, I'm spending as if I'm going to have the worst sequence that has ever been known to man. And yet that didn't happen. And in fact, the opposite happened. So we both kind of talked about, well, what do we do now? We kind of oversaved initially anyway. And it was like, well, how do we learn to spend more comfortably? Like you said, always being frugal. And the idea was take some of that off the top and push it over to the side into the separate fun bucket and then assume as if it's already spent, but it gives you that pot to kind of spend from without any guilt. And it's been a massive change in the way that I do things. I'm not disrupting my overall financial plan. There's no risk to running out of money. It's literally like taking some of the money off the table that we underspent or I underspent at the beginning and said, okay, well, you could have spent all the way up to 4% or even higher. So go ahead and take that off the top, put it over to the side, allow yourself to spend it, because if you leave it in the full bucket, you're not going to spend it. Okay. You're just going to look at it as the entirety and you're going to be afraid to spend anything, just like you always have been.
Gotcha. The whole thing is like a psychological shell game situation, right? Because like you're moving the money. So you're like, this is already spent. Like my projection, my portfolio still supports me, yet there's this pile of money over here. So when you told me about it, when I heard the whole concept, I was like, this is great. I told Elizabeth about it. It was before she retired. And I was like, I think this could free us up a little bit. Cause I don't need to play the same psychological games as she does. And everyone's different, right? I just view things a little bit differently. I'm like, it's still in the same bucket, but there's one thing you mentioned in the past, and that's like the sequence of returns. So if you pull it off, then you don't feel the pain of maybe the market's down and you're like, oh, well, I have leeway to spend whatever, an extra 20K per year. But if the market's down, you're going to think a little too hard about it, right? And you're like, I don't want to sell when the market's down, so you don't spend it.
Well, and that's why I think, you know, I really fret when I hear people say, oh, well, if the market's down, you just dial things back. Well, I'm going to be 60 years old this year, right? So you think about how much time do you have left? Now, hopefully I live a long time, but you don't want to have to feel like I've got to dial it back for the next 3 years or 4 years when you don't know how many years you have to really enjoy things to the fullest, be the most active, be the ability to travel overseas to far-flung places. And I didn't want to be in that situation where, well, I'll just dial it back for a year or two. I want to be able to just go and not worry about the market. So that fund bucket is in a money market. It is in cash. There's no risk. There's no concern about, can I afford this trip next year because the market's down?
Love it. And yeah, great concept. I think it's caught on with a lot of people. Can you tell us, you tell us the exact amount if you want, but can you give us a percentage or some idea before we get into some of the things we spent money on, just like what level should people set aside or think about maybe if they want to test this concept or something?
Yeah, I kind of like percentages because then it doesn't, you know, my numbers are different than other people's numbers and so forth. I'm happy to give the actual numbers, but I think when people think about it, percentages helps. So I kind of viewed it as my normal spending rate was X dollars and it's equivalent to like an extra 20% above that. So let's say hypothetically you were spending, I'll just use a round number to make the math easy, $100,000 a year, which is a lot, right? You might do $20,000 or $25,000 on top of that per year in this, you know, fund number, I guess you would say, or fund bucket. That's a round. I just wanted to be able to do the math easily on that. A lot. So I used 100, but it could be a percentage, you know, 20, 25%, something like that. And that's kind of what I did. I did a percentage of my normal spend. So it's impactful. Now I'm retired. Beyond, this is my 10th year of retirement, actually. I've not made any money, you know, purposely in the last 10 years. So I've had a good sequence. So there's a lot of factors that go into that for me personally.
Got it. And you mentioned you and Kevin, which I need to get Kevin on the show before too long, or we'll just play guitars down here or something. But
yeah, you go to his house and you can play in that huge Marshall stack he's got.
I have a mini one right here that takes a 9-volt battery. It's a little, I could put it on my belt and walk around.
You know,
he's
going on the Monsters of Rock cruise next week, I think.
That's cool.
As of this recording, at least.
That's cool. All right. Oh, yeah. So you and Kevin, for about 5 years, you were retired. And you were like, hey, this has been great, but maybe we need to figure out how to like really do this. So any other details around it to add context, or should we just get into the stuff?
No, I don't think so. But I think it is helpful to have other people kind of push you. And as I was going through my spending last year, you'll see I shared these experiences with other people who have their own fund buckets. So yeah, kind of each of us push each other to, it's like, really, should I really do that? And you're like, well, I'm doing it, so you should do it, you know? So, yeah. And we're in the same kind of, you know, asset level and timeline. So it's easy to kind of have that accountability, you know, spending accountability partner, I guess you would say.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's the opposite of what, I mean, it makes sense. It's the opposite of like people are in a group and they're like, all right, we're saving, we're going to get out of debt or whatever. And now you're in a different
stage. Well, we're on the back end of this whole timeline, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're on the downslope, the spending side.
Yeah.
Whereas most people in this community are on the accumulation side. And yeah, absolutely. That is what I did. And that's what he did. And that's what others in this kind of, you know, cohort did. We all were super savers for many, many years. But then it's like, well, what are you going to do with all this at some point, right? Yeah. If you've been really successful at doing it, there should be a kind of, well, now what?
Yeah.
And we're in the now what period.
I think some of yours will be higher level than what I'm doing. So I'll start. All right. So I'll start. I don't want to go after you. So one of mine, this is a simple thing, and it is ordering like the more expensive item. And there's a specific example. So we went out to some local, like nice restaurants called Sugar Beet. It's in town here. Have you been there yet?
No.
So pretty nice. It's by the railroad tracks. And you're like, this is a pretty nice place for like the location that it's at, kind of an odd location overall. And I was going to order a steak. I usually don't order steak out because I think I could do a better job most of the time. But I was like, this is supposed to be one of the finest restaurants here in Longmont. So I'll check it out. And it had two options. I think one was a skirt steak or some other sort of lesser, more economical option. And then they had the filet. And I was like, I kind of want the filet, but I didn't even, this was all in my head. I was like, kind of want the filet, but it's like, whatever, it's $55 instead of $35 or something. I forget the price, but it was a little bit more, but nothing crazy. And Elizabeth was like, do you really want that one or do you want to get the filet? And I was like, I kind of want the filet. She was like, just order it. It's only a little bit more, like it's inconsequential for what we're looking at right now. And we don't eat out that often. So just go ahead and get it. So I did order it and I was like, yeah, you're right. And I was like, it's fine. Yeah. Like we don't even notice it. Again, this is a small dollar amount, but it's just,
no, I'm the same way because I feel the same way. Like I could make this at home probably as well or close to as well for a fraction of the cost. But I agree with you. Like if I am going to order a steak, I'm going to order the filet mignon because it's just usually better. They don't mess it up. It's not usually dry. Like some of the others are overcooked. And I'm just like, if you're going to order it, just go for it and don't worry about it.
Yeah, totally. So it ended up being a good thing overall. And then closely related, I'll double up. We typically eat in like most of the time. I think we would only eat out like maybe once every 2 to 3 weeks or something like that. And we were just like, we should eat out more. Like we like some of the restaurants. There's some cool happy hours and breweries and blah, blah, blah. So we're like, one of our things that we're trying to do is just to eat out more, which is like directly against what the most of the advice on like personal finance is like, you can save a lot of money. Like, what are you spending on food? Don't eat out so much. And we're like, we should eat out more and support these local businesses around here. And it's been fun. We invite a couple friends out and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit social and it does help the local community because it's tough to run a restaurant and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think it goes to, you know, spend where your values are, right? So it's important to you and especially the social aspect. You kind of get the double benefit there. You get the good food and the social aspect. I still don't eat out very much, but as you'll see, I definitely do spend money on other things that are, you know, socially related, I guess you would say.
So let's get to your first one.
Well, so, you know, I've gone on the FinTalks cruise the last 2 years. So it was in January of 24 and just finished again in January of 25. And, you know, you can choose an interior room, you can choose a balcony room, or you can go big, right? So on the first cruise, this is in 24, I booked my own room. Kevin said later, hey, I want to go on this cruise. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I have a, you know, balcony room. And he's like, well, can we share it? And I was like, well, yeah, we could. And he's like, or we could just get a suite because basically it's the same price that you were going to pay by yourself times two, but we share the suite. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. So we got a suite on that. And then we did it again this year. And this year's ship was much bigger and a much bigger suite and with a lot of perks. So I guess we're stuck with having to have a suite every year now from now on. But yeah, I mean, it was a little bit more costly, but it was definitely worth it.
So I've only been on one river cruise and no big ocean cruise. Mm-hmm. So what's the suite like? Like what kind of level of amenities are we talking?
So on the last one, so this is 2025, we were on the Oasis of the Seas. It's Royal Caribbean and their suites, you get a lot of extra perks. So there's a separate suite lounge that's only available to people who have suites. They also serve drinks in there, which is nice for free, which normally you have to pay for. They also have separate areas by the pool, they have a separate dining room. And then there's some other amenities. Like if you want to go to a show, they just get you in. There's no problem. And there's special seating. And so there's a number of perks. It was also like you go in through a separate entrance when you board. They escort you off the ship. So there was a whole bunch of extra perks. But the room itself was about twice the size of a regular balcony room. So it's kind of like we just had two balcony rooms that didn't have a wall in between it, in essence, right?
Got it.
So we, you know, obviously twin beds, but the bathroom is much bigger. And I'm happy to share a bathroom as long as it's a decent size. So instead of having two tiny bathrooms, we had one large bathroom.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it was kind of, and yeah, it was a little bit more than maybe what two balconies would be individually, but not much more.
And you get all those great perks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like it takes a little of the stress off, like you said, a separate entrance. And like, if you want to do something, like you don't have to worry too much about like getting the last ticket or seat or
yeah, because I guess Kevin and Becky and Steven, also Becky from one of the original co-hosts of the Catching Up to Phi podcast, and her husband were on there with us, and they were like, well, you guys are getting a suite, we're getting a suite.
Nice.
But yeah, some of those perks were great, and they didn't have tickets. They didn't realize you had to actually reserve, even though you don't have to pay for the shows. You do have to make reservations. Like, we didn't know that. So we just went to the concierge at the suite desk and said, oh, we want to go to their shows, and they're like, absolutely, what time? Where, you know, and they were just like, done. And even like a restaurant, which you needed reservations for, but you didn't have to pay for, they're like, what time do you, we're like, can we eat at this restaurant? And they're like, well, it's reservations only, but yeah, sure. What time do you want to go? And we're like, well, whatever they have available. She's like, what time do you want to eat? I was like, I don't know, 6:30. She's like, done.
Okay. That's cool. Very cool. Yeah. And well, why don't you keep going? Because I gave two, so. Cruise, you upgraded, you got like the more premium option.
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of cruises this year, we meaning, so I have this group called the Slackers, Kevin's in it, Stephen and Becky are in it, a number of other people are in it from our kind of rock retirement club group, all in the same stage. So we've been doing a number of cruises this year, which is kind of interesting because I never thought of myself as a cruiser, but we go on this line called Silver Sea, which is like a really high-end cruise line. It's actually owned by Royal Caribbean. So a couple of hacks. Here comes the frugal hack, right? If you have certain status on Royal Caribbean, it translates over into a very high status on Silversea. And so if you have 30 days on Royal Caribbean, you can get what's equivalent to having 100 days on Silversea. And that gives you the most important perk, which sounds weird, is free laundry.
Okay.
But laundry is super, super expensive on a cruise ship, and you get free laundry no matter how many times you want to have your laundry done. And you also get 5% off all future cruises, and their cruises are pretty expensive, so the 5% off really is material. And so we did a cruise run on Royal Caribbean because we already had the FinTox days, and we're like, we need to get 30 days. So in the spring of last year, I did a Caribbean trip. If you have your own room, you get double points. So I had my own room for a Caribbean trip, and then I did a four-day kind of finish off to get the 30 days cruise. And I also had my own room, so I got double points. So I got the 30 points I needed. It translated over to Silversea. And then we did a whole bunch of Silversea cruises last year.
Gotcha.
So went to the Mediterranean with my daughter and my mother, and Becky and Steven went on that one as well. And then Becky and Steven have a bucket list of places they want to go. And they're a little bit older than I am, so they want to kind of go years, use those years, right? So they said, I want to go to Australia and New Zealand. And there's this cruise that, and I was like, well, I'm really interested in New Zealand. When is it? And she's like, it's in December. And I was like, well, I'm going to be in Bali in October, but there's a pretty big gap between when I finished the Bali trip, which was Amy's Five Freedom Retreat, which was another bougie thing, right?
Yeah.
You can see the travel theme going here. And they said, well, there's an Australia one in the middle, so why don't we just do that too? Okay. So I went from Bali to Singapore, Singapore to Australia, and jumped on a cruise. We did a 32-day cruise around Australia and New Zealand at the end of the year. That's why I wasn't here to buy my house. And so that was another thing. I bought a house, but
yep.
And a car. I bought a car last year too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All the big stuff. So when I knew you were going on the cruise, because I can't remember when I saw you before you left, but I knew you were heading out probably at like Campfire something. And I knew you were going to be gone for like months basically, and the time zones would be weird, but I thought, I was like, hey man, I need to check in, and I'm like, it's probably the middle of the night, which I know is not like you have your phone silenced or something, so I should just be like, hey man, I hope the trip's going well. But how was it being like, number one, away that long, and then also like being on a ship that long?
Yeah, so that was my first experience being away for that extended period of time. So, of course, I'm a Quicken fanatic. You know, I have all of my, you know, daily stuff that I do, you know, watch all my accounts and so forth. And I couldn't really do that for 2 months. So that was a little freaky. So I set up spreadsheets to kind of track everything, but I put everything on autopilot. So all my bills were paid automatically. All my credit cards were paid automatically. Everything was just kind of automated, which I had done previously, but I had never really stepped away from it to see if it would kind of work. And it did. It was flawless. No problems.
Cool.
So I found out I could actually be away for a period of time. So that was kind of one of my first kind of hesitations, was being away from my home-based computer. Oh, my God. But so that was one thing. The Bali trip was great. That was almost a month. And it was super easy because there's 50, you know, friends basically that are traveling around with you pre and post and the event itself. So you kind of lose track of time when you're having fun, right?
Yeah.
And then when I went to Australia and New Zealand, there were five of us on the first half on the Australia piece and seven of us on the second part, the New Zealand piece. And again, time just kind of flies by when you're having fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a super bougie kind of cruise line. So you have a butler, and we had the battle of the butlers. They're all like, you know, bringing, you know, appetizers and drinks and everything to the rooms. And one butler's trying to, one up the other butler. It was crazy. So, and there's not a lot of people on that ship. So there's very few people. There's no like fighting for a lounge chair. I mean, you go to the pool, it's like, where do we want to sit? Not can we sit somewhere?
Gotcha.
And everything's included. So you're not worried about being nickel and dimed. And it's more like, I almost view it as like a private yacht experience almost on that line with a lot of older people. So we were some of the youngest on the ship.
Okay. That makes sense. Interesting. So, and to tie it back around real quick. So lots of cruising, but you mentioned that laundry was free if you have the status or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. And that made me think like, oh yeah, just like packing for such a long trip. And obviously you could buy stuff while you're out. It's not like you're going to a place where they don't have anything. Yeah, it's always a struggle where you're like, I don't know what I'm going to encounter. I feel like I need to bring everything. But I think you've figured out how to like pack light so you don't have like a giant, huge suitcase, right?
So it was basically a medium-sized roller bag and a backpack.
Okay, cool.
And the roller bag, actually, Stephen and Becky brought to Australia for me because they were meeting me there. And so I just had the backpack in Bali.
Very cool. Yeah.
Now, Bali is super hot, so you don't need a lot of heavy clothes. So it's super easy to pack for.
And I just went to Helena, Montana to judge some beer, and it was cold up there. So yeah, that's where it gets tough, where you're like, I think I need to bring boots for snow and like a bunch of layers, and it might be hot inside, but you know, below zero outside.
Yeah, shoes are tough because they take up a lot of space.
All right. We have a sponsor for today, and that is Ghostbed. And I have the Ghostbed Lux mattress, which is pretty soft. I like a little bit of a softer mattress, and I sleep great on it. Ghostbed has been working with us for, I don't know, a couple years now. And I'm curious, how'd you sleep on a ship? Does the ocean motion get to you or anything?
Yeah, I don't really get very seasick, but we did cross the Tasman Sea, which is between Australia and New Zealand. And I don't know if you've seen the news lately, but there's been a lot of issues there. Apparently, it's one of the worst sea crossings in the world. I didn't know that ahead of time. And so we had some really rough seas where literally dishes were falling off the wall, and Stephen and Becky's shower door, which was glass, came off and smashed, so they had to get a new suite. Yeah, whoa. It was crazy. But I got these patches from Elle, who's in the Phi community, and she said, you know, try these. They're homeopathic. They're not like medicated. Mm-hmm. They work great.
Oh, really?
So okay. No issues. Far as that goes. But, and sleeping, I just find at night, it's almost like being in a hammock. You're just kind of moving a little bit.
And I guess after like several days, you probably get used to it. Yeah. Like almost anything, your body adjusts a little bit. Yeah. I definitely get a little seasick when I've been out on like ferries and stuff like that.
Well, smaller boats, a lot of people will get seasick on more than they will on a cruise ship.
Nah, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. They're much bigger. Like I said, I haven't been on one. The one thing I've done occasionally, I'll bring my ghost bed pillow when I travel, like we're about to head out on a road trip. And, you know, sometimes the pillows are, I don't know, they feel like it's filled with I don't know, oatmeal or something. They're just awful pillows. But I do have the ghost bed pillow, and it has like a gel on top. So it actually, you know, me being bald, really cools me down. It keeps me cool at night, which is super important.
Yeah, a good pillow is super important. That's actually one of the things on this cruise line. They have a pillow menu. So they will come and they bring this like box that has the sample pillows, and you can touch them and decide which one you want. So
very interesting.
In case you need that.
So Ghostbed is a family-owned business with 20-plus years of experience. They have over 60,000 five-star reviews and patented sleep and cooling technology. They have a 101-night at-home sleep trial, and you can save 50% site-wide if you go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi or use the code milehighfi at checkout. So thanks for the help and the sponsorship, Ghostbed.
And apparently, if you want to test drive one, you just go to Carl's Basement.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he has one down there. Anybody could just give him a heads up.
My daughter and I stayed there before he had it, so we didn't get to try it out. But Katie was actually in the bed, and I was on the pull-out couch, so I wouldn't have had an opportunity anyway. So next time, we'll have to switch places, I guess.
All right, I'll go next. And one thing that I've been doing, and if you're watching on YouTube, you can see a couple guitars out in front. And I think it was during the pandemic, a lot of people, like myself, bought guitars. So I had played for a few years, but I got sort of like a nicer high-end guitar. And I was like, I love it. This is so much fun to play. It's so much more comfortable. And I just enjoy it. So the last few years, I've been buying more guitars. Typically, I'm getting them used though. So there's still a little frugality with it, but I'm getting them used. One benefit from that is like a car, they depreciate almost immediately. So like if you're buying a used one, typically you can get a reasonably good deal. Also similar to a car, they may already have a couple scratches and they don't look like super pristine. Because the problem is you get that new car, which you'll talk about in a second, and that first scratch, it hurts a little bit. But if you get like a used guitar, maybe someone has actually like played as a musician, like the one in front of me here, the red one. It is a Gibson Les Paul Special, and a touring musician hadn't used it for a few years, and I got a great deal on it, and it makes me happy. I love playing it, and I got another one over there, which actually sold another guitar, which I had some fun with for a few years. And then I was like, I think I want to get this one, which is an Eastman SB55V. And it's actually like relicked. So it's made to look and feel like an old guitar from the 50s.
You know, I used to play guitar very minimally when I was in high school, as probably all guys did, right? Yeah. And I remember having I think it was an Ibanez like Strat copy or something like that. And it was okay and everything. But I had this friend who was a really good guitarist. And he's like, we got to go to the city. So I went to like, whatever, one of those big guitar stores. And he's playing everything. And he's like, this is the one you want. And it was a Hamer, H-A-M-M-E-R.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Played like really nice. I was like, now I understand the difference between, I just thought, yeah, it's a guitar, it's fine, whatever. Yeah. You know, maybe the strings are different or whatever, but no, man, it makes a big difference. Yeah. And it was used, and it was, you know, he was just like, man, if I could have this, I would buy it. But, you know, he wasn't in the market for one. And then I was reading an article yesterday, I think it was in, I don't know, I read the Wall Street Journal a lot, so I don't know if it was in there or not, but it was talking about different musicians, and they said, oh, it's like the guy that played for Canned Heat at Woodstock. And I guess he stepped in for somebody else or something like that. So he was playing that guy's guitar and the amp blew up or something, and he had to play a different amp. And he's like, I would rather have a really good amp than a really good guitar. And so that may be the next thing in your future, is a super nice amp, because that apparently is a big deal. I wouldn't know, but that's what it said.
So I also got a new amp not that long ago, and it's a Fender Blues Junior. Again, I got it on Craigslist, and it looks pristine, right? Like it doesn't look like it was ever used or anything. And basically, I got it for like less than half of what it would be brand new, and blah, blah, blah. There's other, I enjoy negotiating too, and just like, hey, what kind of deal can we make here? The tricky part is they're extremely loud. Like that, I could like, not me, but like, oh, maybe someone like Kevin could actually play shows and like play in a small, like medium-sized club. And like, that would be loud enough. And shout out to Tyler. I've been playing some music with him. So he plays the drums.
I know. I saw one of those drum boxes you were talking about the other day. I drove out. I'm like, oh, that's that drum box thing you were talking about.
So cool. Yeah, yeah. So for the people that don't know, it's like the old little ATM, like building shacks that are in just parking lots. And you probably don't even like notice they're even there.
I wouldn't
anymore.
Have noticed it until you mentioned it. So,
and I literally like drove past it so many times and never even realized there was a little building there. But basically, there's a set of drums, and it's in a commercial area, and there's no other connected building, so it could be extremely loud. And the thing is, drums are insanely loud. Like, we have to wear tons of ear protection and all that. But to be able to play with a drummer, you need like a loud amp. And I was like, perfect excuse to get an amp. And it's been...
And it's portable. I mean, it's not too huge. So you can move it around. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So...
It's not like a Marshall stack.
No. And
which Kevin did get recently. And he said, I can't even turn it above two.
It's so crazy. And for the people that don't know how big that is, which I don't know exactly, because I haven't stood on stage. Yeah, this is what's behind like Slash or AC/DC, and there's like four of them, but Kevin has one, so he can play.
No, he has two cabinets and then whatever the monitor on top.
Yeah. So it's like the normal one, and then there's a slanted one, and then anyway, guitars and amps. And the thing is, like, I've mentioned it in previous shows, but like, you could play music with people. So I'm hanging out with Tyler, playing some music. It's mentally stimulating because I'm like trying to play music and like doing things beyond what I can do. And it's just fun. Like I'm having so much fun with them. I haven't been working on a song. I'm just like down here making some noise.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, that was me. You know, I didn't know how to play much. I just played scales and I had a teacher for a while, but who cares? You're by yourself. Yeah. You're enjoying it. It doesn't matter.
It's fun. Yeah. So fun. Okay. What's next on your list?
So I would say, because of all this travel, I've been doing a lot of airline travel. And so I kind of have decided a while ago, I decided I would only do, you know, nonstops. So that was like a given. And then in the past couple of years, I decided I'm always going to do economy plus, you know, so now they have like economy basic, economy plus, which is the extra leg room. And I said, it's a given. I'm always going to do economy plus. So that was kind of the first like little test to like, can I spend more money? And then lately, I've been doing, so if I go overseas, I always do premium economy, which is kind of like a business class or first class seat domestically, internationally. And then also what I do is I look for those first class upgrades that typically happen about 30 days out. They'll send you like, hey, you could upgrade to first class for whatever. And I still, my frugality, you know, mindset is still there. And I'm like, well, I don't want to pay more than $100 an hour. So if it's a 10-hour flight, $1,000, I've kind of been a little bit, that's kind of what I would like to pay under, but I've allowed myself to go a little bit over that. So when I was going to Australia, I think from Singapore, I got a upgrade, and these are the lay flat Singapore Airlines, super nice, like cocoons.
Yeah.
It's like $1,000. So I was like, and it was an 8-hour flight or a 7-hour flight. And I was like, all right, whatever. It's a long day. I'm just going to do it. And then lately, I did upgrade my daughter and I going on another cruise to Iceland this year. Again, with some of the slackers, we're doing Iceland, Scotland. We've got another one down in Mediterranean. So it's like 6 weeks that she's going to be with me. My mom's coming on part of that. But we upgraded to lay flat first class on the way over because it's an overnight flight. And we're going to be in Dublin only for 2 days before we leave. And we want to be able to hit the ground running and be well rested. And
got it.
So we did kind of pull the trigger on that. So I've definitely been flying a little nicer in the past year.
And I've tested some of the like economy plus, and I don't know, certain days I feel like more claustrophobic on the plane, and I'm like, is it smaller or is it like mental or what's going on? But those handful of times, like the 2 inches they give you or whatever for the economy plus,
it makes a difference.
It really feels so much different. Now for the higher level, in you mentioned like international, and these are longer flights. Is it $1,000 on top of whatever the initial ticket was?
Or usually it's an add-on amount. Sometimes they'll refund you. Like if you did economy plus, they might give you that economy plus amount back. It depends on the airline, but most of the time it's just a differential fare. But like, for instance, I think our Dublin trip, We're doing it on American. Oh, and this is the other thing I do. So it's that one we can't do is a nonstop from Denver. So we have to go, I think, through that one is going through DFW, I think. But these short leg domestic, you know, pieces, I pretty much always just do first class now. Because I'm like, well, let me at least be well rested on one of the legs.
Okay.
So, and on the way back, we're coming back from Monte Carlo. And so we have to fly from Nice to Philadelphia, Philadelphia to Denver. And the Nice to Philadelphia, we're on premium economy. I'm waiting to try to get an upgrade there, but it's still a little pricey. But on the Philadelphia to Denver, I got a, I think it was a $200 upgrade to first class. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just do it. It's the second leg. We're going to be tired. Let's just make it nice.
Got it.
So forgot what your question was. Oh, the difference. The one to Dublin, if we bought the first class ticket outright at the gate, you know, at the beginning, it was going to be like $5,000 or $6,000 each. Mm-hmm. So we bought a premium economy flight, which I think was under $1,000. So it was a premium economy. Well, it was economy to DFW and then premium economy from DFW to Dublin. But it was only $1,000. And premium economy, those seats, they go back pretty far. They just don't lay all the way flat. And there's only a handful of them. It's kind of like a first class seat on a domestic flight. That's what it feels like. It's still pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, if you're stuck with that, it's not so bad. But then they had an offer for, I think it was like, I want to say $1,200 to upgrade to the lay flat first class, which is the Polaris, I think United. I was like, yeah, let's do that. And then, so I paid $1,000 at the outset, plus the $1,200 is $2,200 versus the $5,000 or $6,000 it would have been if I bought it at the beginning.
Got it.
So, yeah, still the frugality person is trying to make a deal.
Well, I mean, even at your very high level of wealth, like $5,000 a pop, and you're like, I could do like the opportunity cost of the, you know, $3,000 or whatever. It's like you could pay for some awesome meals on the vacation. So it's just like, you could take your time with it. And you say about 30 days out is when some of these upgrades are available.
This one actually just came through and we're still, I don't know, a couple months out on that one.
Okay.
So, and, just you know, again, there aren't that many, you know, first class seats. So you do kind of have to be mindful that you may not get it 30 days out. It may be gone.
Gotcha. Yeah, those are definitely more, those are certainly non-frugal. Like I know I've been studying a little bit with some of the credit card rewards and travel hacking. And I know like our friend Kristen Knapp, people are like, oh yeah, I got this amazing flight and blah, blah, blah. And I don't find it super enjoyable to whatever, you have to like convert your Chase points to Chick-fil-A reward points. and then you get to transfer it to like British Airways. And then take a boat.
I've been successful with hotels, you know, Hyatt transfers, like the no-brainer easy button.
Yep.
And that's from like Chase to Hyatt. I do that all the time, stay in Hyatts all the time.
Yeah.
And then I have been successful just using the points for just buying hotel rooms with points.
Okay.
So we're doing that. We're going to Tahiti in a few weeks.
Oh, really? Man.
And there's some like, you know, on the water bungalows that, not over the water, but on the water.
Sure.
That I would never pay cash for because it's just like crazy expensive. But I was like, I got all these points.
Yeah.
It's not the best, you know, redemption rate, but what else am I going to use it for?
Right.
So I did that. And then also we are flying to Tahiti on United Premium Economy from Denver to San Francisco, San Francisco to Tahiti. And it was 60,000 points. That was like a super no-brainer. Yeah. And it's premium economy. So it's not even just basic seats.
Yeah.
So that was crazy. A big score. $5 plus 60,000 points.
That's nuts. I think I'm using like 30,000 points to go to fucking Cincinnati. Yeah. No offense, Cincinnati. I'm very much looking forward to it. But the Chase to Hyatt, I'm getting better. I like, there are hoops that you could jump through, and then there's some like easier redemption. And I'm a beginner, so I'm trying not to get overwhelmed with complexity. And I, like anything, you could always make things more complicated. Right. So I'm building my way up, and you know, it's working out well.
Yeah, like, so and the far. Chase to Hyatt is really, I mean, it is such a good redemption value. Mm. And literally, I'm a, like, I have a high status at Hyatt but yeah. I've never paid them a dollar. And they're like, oh, Mr. Troutman, thanks for coming back. Thanks for giving me a free room again.
That's cool. I was going to say, like, we're staying at one on Monday. Like, mm-hmm. and it was through Kristen's help. And I think, I don't know the schedule, the episodes will be out, but I did two shows with Kristen where it's like advanced and beginner, like travel hacking
stuff.
Oh, I
can't wait to hear those. Yeah.
Very good. And I just got a new, whatever, the Chase Sapphire. Is it the Reserve? Is the lower one?
No, Preferred.
Preferred. I got the Preferred one because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to use all this stuff just because we don't travel as much.
Yeah, the big thing with the Reserve is, well, you get a little extra on the point side, on the accumulation side, but you do get the lounges, which is good. But Capital One is a nice competitor to that. Our Capital One lounge in Denver is awesome.
It's nice. Yeah. And luckily I have friends that have access. So I'll see you in there before too long. All right. We'll keep on trucking here. So I'm going to add one more from my end. Actually, we'll do quick hitters.
Yeah.
So I got an e-bike not too long ago.
Yeah.
It's electric. And I forget the model name, but it's the one that's more like a cruiser. So I look like an old lady riding on the beach or something like that. It's hilarious. Like Elizabeth just laughs at me riding it, but it's more comfortable than other bikes that I had. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I look ridiculous.
Like sitting up kind of, with the handlebars like straight up.
Yeah. That's it. But I'm like, I want a comfortable bike. So I splurged for that and got like the extra extended battery and a couple other things. Mm-hmm. Really happy with that. I've only been out a handful of times, like less than 100 of miles because I got it around the holidays and it's been a little cold and which is just not super pleasant to go fast. It's just cold, but that's been awesome. I'll do one more. And I guess just the frugal habit is strong within many of us. And I had a good one, which is to just like resist buying stuff so often on Amazon. And I would like hold off buying things and then I would get it. And I'm like, this was amazing. I wish I would have gotten this sooner. So I've kind of eased up on that. And I will order, if I'm like, I think this could be helpful, I usually have a pretty good gut feeling about it, then I will go ahead and get it. And I know this is, again, the opposite of what most people, they're like, put it in your cart and wait 30 days and see if you still need it. Like I wasn't doing that. I just like, I'm like, I'm not going to order anything. So now I'm like, I eased up and I'm like ordering stuff. Like there's a couple of guitar pedals over there and there's a few other things where I'm just like, you know what? I think it'll make me happy. I'll give it a shot. So it's felt good.
And I'm amazed here. So I used to live in Crested Butte, and when you ordered on Amazon, it was like 5 days.
Okay.
Or maybe 3 days if you're lucky. Here, it's like, oh, that'll be here tomorrow morning. I'm like, what? How is that possible?
You know? Or later in the afternoon. Right. It's like I literally ordered a couple wires and other things. And it's like, it'll be here before 5.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know. So it's almost scary how easy it is to buy stuff. So I usually do put it in my kind of wish list or in the cart. And I do ask myself, you know, at least give it some thought before hitting buy, because it is super easy to just say buy and it's here like you said this afternoon.
It's weird. Yeah. So I put it through a reasonable filter, but I've eased up a little bit and it feels good because like there is, it wasn't deprivation before. Obviously you could look around here. I have a million gadgets and like electronics and all that stuff. But because of that, I do have a pretty good gauge on like, is this going to help me do something like faster, easier, just a smarter way to like solve a problem or not? Or is this just like a wasteful thing? So I'm usually thoughtful about it. But in the past, I was just like, I will keep putting it off and then realize, oh, I could have solved that problem for like $13. And I just thought it was going to be too expensive or whatever.
Yeah. So.
All right. What else do you have on your list?
I had two big things last year, if those weren't big enough. I bought a new car last year. Now, I have been saving for that car, and the money was in a separate. I'm one of these people that needs to compartmentalize everything. Okay. So I had a separate savings account that I had the money fully funded for this car. So it wasn't like I ran out and saw a TV ad and decided to, for only $300 a month, we can put you in this brand new car now. I bought a 2024 Toyota RAV4 Hybrid.
Nice.
And I've had Toyotas for most of my life. I have a Toyota FJ Cruiser. I still have it. It's parked in the driveway right now, as a matter of fact, with 210,000 miles on it. And it has just been fabulous. But, you know, they're not the most comfortable vehicles. They're also not great on gas mileage. So for the most part, I leave that in Crested Butte. I have this little apartment over there. So I leave it over there and I drive the RAV4 back and forth. And every time I fill it up, I'm like, this can't be right. It can't be full. It's $13. I drove all the way to Crested Butte, which is 200 miles or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this thing gets almost 50 miles to the gallon. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's a hybrid. It's not plug-in hybrid. It's just a regular hybrid. And I had been looking at them for a while, and they, you know, was hoping to get a used one. Uh-huh. But the used ones were actually going at the time I was looking, because I ordered this, and it took like 8 months to come in.
Really?
Dang. Because I wanted it, you know, the way I wanted it. And at the time, they were just hard to come by. And I was looking at used ones on the lot. Either they weren't exactly what I wanted, but for the most part, they were selling them over the cost of a new one, because you could have it today.
Gotcha.
And they might have a couple thousand miles on it. I'm like, I don't want a car that has a couple thousand miles on it. It's going to cost me more than, and I have a car. It's not like I'm out of a vehicle.
Right.
So I could afford to wait. So it, you know, I ordered it, came in 8 months later, and I love it. It's great.
Got it. And
I'll have it for another 20 years. So my FJ Cruiser is 2008.
Got it.
So I keep cars for a long time.
Interesting. Yeah. And you told me, I rode in the RAV4, like right after you got it, I think we were down in Colorado Springs or something. Yeah. It was pretty fresh and new then.
Yeah. It's brand new at that time.
So, and you don't have to answer. I'm just curious. What did that cost you?
Take home, you know, with tax and all the stuff. I think it was 43.
Not bad. Okay.
Well, that was a lot. It's a lot for a car.
Yeah.
And I had looked at the Prime, which is a plug-in. Mm-hmm. They want another 10 on top for that. Now, mine has a lot of bells and whistles. So, you can get them for cheaper if you kind of cut out some of the stuff that I got. But I keep cars for so long. I was like, I'm going to want the nicer radio. I'm going to want the slightly bigger screen. And I want the color choice that I chose in the model line. Right. I got the XSE. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to have this for a long time. A couple thousand extra dollars of these add-ons, I'm going to be happy I had it, just like, you know, with your stuff.
Yeah. And that may, I mean, we talked because you sold a truck as well. And I have an old truck around the same time. I've had it for 19 years and it's like a 2005. So it's a 20-year-old truck. Yeah. To your point, I keep stuff for a long time as well. So I was like, it makes sense to, like, if you know how you work and you're good to keep it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I did have a 2004 F-250. Now you talk about gas mileage. I think it's horrendous.
Yeah.
And it was basically a utilitarian vehicle by then. You know, it's a gas gauge didn't work. The converter had been stolen. It had dents in it. And I was just like, I don't need this anymore. So I got rid of that. So that was my vehicle that I did get rid of.
Yeah. And I think I've been dragging my feet. Pretty sure I'm going to sell my truck. So if anyone's
interested, you'll get good money for it. Yeah. You'd be surprised. I mean, I was shocked. I was like, no, I looked up what it was worth. And actually, the person that bought it was in the town that I lived in, Crested Butte. And they brought it to the mechanic and they came back and said, done. So I was like, well, I guess a mechanic liked it. But he was the same mechanic that had worked on it the whole time. And I think he was just like, these things are bomber. You know, they're really good. It was the small V8, but those things apparently go forever.
Gotcha.
And it had like 170,000 miles. They sold it for like $5,000. So.
Interesting. Yeah. And I was going to say, I have the medium V8. So maybe the small. So it's the 4.6.
I have a 5.8 V8.
Okay.
5.4. So 5.4.
It was a bigger. You're 250. Mine's a 150. Right, but anyway, yeah.
Still, those engines go. So.
Yeah. And it's like, it wasn't like the first model year, blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Okay. Anything else?
I bought a house.
Okay. big hitter, which.
But I sold a house for far more than I bought this one for. So I downsized in price. I did not downsize in size much.
Gotcha.
So my old house was 2,700 square feet. This one's 2,100 square feet. And this was a new build. So everything was nice and new. And I don't have to hopefully worry about any mechanical things or anything like that. It's even got a warranty for a year. So while I don't really view it as a purchase necessarily, it's more of a swap.
Yeah. So this is one of the smallest house, like the our house is one of the smallest houses in the neighborhood. I think it literally is the smallest model that you can get, which is still a little bit too big.
How many
big
square
for
feet
us.
Is this?
I think it's 1800 upstairs, and the unfinished basement is another 900 or so.
Yeah, that's nice. I only have a crawl space downstairs. So
okay.
That's kind of a bummer.
Interesting. And I was going to say, like, you probably could have downsized to something even smaller, but it's hard to find something.
Yeah,
even
well,
smaller.
So apparently there's not a lot of new builds in Longmont. And yeah. So I'm over by the airport, which is kind of funny because I want to ask you this question. What's with the plane? I'm looking at this plane, and these are the planes that fly in and out of the airport, literally over my house all the time. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. He has one of those planes on his logo.
So Carl and I started the show, and I had the idea for Mile High Fi. I was like, oh, it's catchy. Yeah. I like that name. And then we were starting to think about like logos, and we're 13-year-old boys at heart. And we were like, oh, Mile High Club, Mile High right. Club, and then Mile High Fi Club. And we're like, okay, we could throw that in. So he was like,
okay,
I'll That's draw it up. So yeah. This is Carl's art. It's a
awesome.
Biplane. And yeah, we
and
don't
I
have
live
any other
right,
logo.
You know, you can see the mountains from my house. You can see these planes. It's like, oh, this is like,
Yeah,
very cool.
It's pretty fun. Yeah, so there's a bunch of shirts floating around out there. Yeah. We got stickers and all that stuff.
It's an awesome logo.
Thank you.
I thought you did it, but I have to
Carl.
Give kudos to Carl.
All Carl.
I don't know where we were on that last conversation.
All good. I think, well, you bought a house. We were just talking about house stuff.
Size and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's not a ton of new construction, and it's tough to find houses that are sort of smaller.
Yeah, and my lot is sizable. It's like a third of an acre.
Okay.
So that was one thing that attracted me. The other thing, as I mentioned, I'm going to be 60 this year. Everything's on one level.
Yeah.
So it's a 3-bedroom plus an office. So I have room for, you know, some guests. And it's kind of like your upstairs living area. It's all open. So I really like that.
Cool.
It's also got a 3-car garage, which is an added bonus, but.
That is, yeah, it's tight in the garage, and people around here have different toys or whatever, and they make, I mean, I don't even think I could pull my truck in, but it basically has like 2 inches on like to the door and then 2 inches to like the steps. Like it's.
Yeah, that's right. Cause I looked at, so I have a 2 and a 1. So the 1 is kind of like my, you know, stuff bay, I guess you would say. And the 2, my daughter was over and she has a Toyota 4Runner. And I had, well, the RAV4 when she was there. And I was like, are these going to even fit in here? Like the door doesn't seem wide enough.
Right.
But they do.
But barely.
But you don't have a lot of room. So,
yeah.
You know, definitely you have to have your wits about you when you're coming in and out of the garage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I feel like garages are smaller or, I mean, they're built for smaller cars.
Yeah. In my other house, we had 2 individual doors. It was still a 2-car garage, but it was 2 individual doors. And I think you get a lot more room that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a few feet in between.
Yeah.
So you could
and even the doors,
the door.
Seem, you know, like two, if you put the 2 doors next to each other, they seem like they would be wider than a double door.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I covered the stuff on my list. Any others on yours?
No, you know, just a lot of more of the same this year. Anything, any big things you're looking at doing in 2025?
The one big thing is we're thinking about getting out of the Front Range area during the heat of the summer and head up to the mountains. So I'm not sure, like we went a couple times to like Breckenridge and Leadville last year. We do enjoy some novelty, but at the same time, like Leadville is super cool. It's a little more rugged and there's like less commercial stuff around. So I like that kind of feel for a town, but yeah, we may rent a place for like a month or something like that.
Oh, that's cool. That's one of the reasons I wanted to keep a foothold in Crested Butte because I know it gets hot here in the summer. So
yeah. And then, you know, you go up there, hiking is great. Yeah. It's a little bit, I mean, it can still get up to, you know, some warm temperatures and it does feel hot because the sun, it's quite intense, but at night it cools off and it just
cold.
It feels great. And you've lived up there for a long time. So it's just like feels comfy.
Yeah, it's super cool in the summer, you know. And when we moved to Crested Butte, we moved there for the skiing. And the saying was, you come for the winter, you stay for the summer because the summers are just gorgeous up in the mountains.
Yeah, looks so amazing. So that might be a big splurge that we do. And other than that, like we've been, like we're going on a road trip coming up, heading to Joshua Tree and Death Valley. And we were slowly testing just like staying at nicer places a little bit more. Like we just switched from the original Airbnb that we had booked to one that was maybe 30% more expensive, but it's just like, it looks a little bigger, looks a little bit nicer, and it'll be more comfortable in there for sure.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
So before we jet, we didn't mention it, but we're going to publish this on both of our feeds. So if they're listening to this on the Mile High Five feed, why don't you talk about your show a little bit?
Yeah. So it's the Mark's Money Mind show. I took a little bit of a hiatus in January and February. So this will be one of the first episodes kind of on coming back into action. And I started it with your help actually last year, right around economy time, which is coming up here.
Right.
So, and I have, I don't know, it's probably about 40 episodes out there already. And yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting back behind the mic and publishing a whole bunch of new shows. And yeah, so.
Very cool. And I was going to say, you did a great job like recording while you were on the road and stuff. Like when we were working together to get the show launched, I was like, you know, you could bring this stuff and da 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 da. And I listened to some of the shows when you were like on a ship and otherwise, you're like, I'm not sure when I'm going to publish this. And, but like the audio was awesome. And I didn't tell you.
Honestly, all the stuff that with the mentorship that you did was just fabulous. I would never have gotten it off the ground. And just, you know, selecting very small things like the right equipment, the right setup, thinking about certain things, making sure your audio is really good versus, you know, concentrating more on the video, concentrate more on the audio. And yeah, we even did one with Alan and Katie Donegan and Rachel Richards. And this was in one of the rooms at the Plateran in Bali. And, you know, I was so worried about the sound because it was all like marble floors. And I was like, this is going to come out really bad. But running it through Auphonic cleaned it all up and it came out really good.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. I couldn't tell weren't in the studio. Oh, yeah.
That was not an ideal location to be recording in. And literally the other thing was, it was like we were running to do it in time because we had something else to do and we were trying to squeeze it in. I'm like, oh my God, this is not going to work.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah. Check out Mark's show if you haven't checked it out. There's a lot of familiar faces and great topics that you cover.
Great. So. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you recently moved to a new house and there's always a lot of stuff to do. So what have you been working on in the last week or what's been going on?
Oh my God. Yeah. So new construction. One thing I didn't, I guess, realize is that they landscape the front of your yard, but not the back of your yard. So I moved in and it's dirt. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I could throw some grass seed down or something like that. And no. You kind of need a landscaping plan. So fortunately, my neighbor had just done theirs because literally all the homes in the neighborhood are brand new. And so she had a reference. They seemed really good. And I was like, you know what? Normally I do all this research and I interview people. And I'm like, you know what? It looks good. It's fine. I'm just going to go with it. I'm not going to, you know, spend too much time trying to figure this out. But the bill was a hell of a lot more than I expected. But, you know, it was just all part of the process. I sold another house for a lot more than I bought this one for, and I just kind of viewed it as it's all part of the deal. So the landscaper guys were over. You talked about maybe recording at my house, and I said, you know, it's probably better to do it here. A, you have a much awesome, very awesome setup. Yeah, it was super noisy and probably is pretty much in the neighborhood all the time with all the construction. So that was the big kind of whoa. And then I had to buy new furniture and blinds, and man, I've just been going crazy with that. My daughter, Katie, has just been huge help with that as a kind of a designer and, you know, stuff. Nice. So it was more of like, Dad, here's, you know, this would look good. And I'm like, yeah, looks great. Let's go for it.
It's tough, like decision fatigue of just like, what should I get in this spot? And I don't know if you're like, if you have the, like the eye for like what looks good or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I went to this furniture store down here, which is like America's Furniture Warehouse or something like that, huge place, right? Yeah. And you just get so overwhelmed with like, well, I don't know how this is going to look. But my daughter, I mean, I don't know how she did this, but she's taken pictures of it, made 3D images, placed it all in my house, you know, on virtually, and was like, what do you think about this? I'm like, wow, that looks great. Let's go with that. But would be like, well, what about this bedroom set or this bedroom set? So it really made it super easy. And so she was kind of my, I guess, designer for the whole thing, and that made it a lot easier.
And speaking of the landscaping, so we moved here like 5 years ago, same deal, like they do the front yard but not the back, and it was like, I mean, I guess they filled this whole area with like clay fill dirt or something.
I've been walking around and you've got like 3 inches of mud on your shoes, you know.
It is insane. Yeah, and it's like, like water doesn't absorb into it. Like
it's, yeah, it's that like sort clay. Of clay.
Yeah. So it's really strange. And you have an HOA?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Fucking HOAs.
I don't mind them too bad, because I lived in a neighborhood where if we didn't have an HOA, the place would have gone, you know, would look like crap. So
definitely pros and cons. We had a whole, have you heard about the prairie dog controversy out here?
No, but we had, what was it, like ground gophers or something like that. Okay. And prairie dogs are similar. Man, they're just invasive.
Yeah. And like, it's another story for another day.
We used to shoot them, by the way, which you probably can't do here.
can't do that anymore. They're slightly protected. But yeah, it was a whole thing with our HOA, which I've teased it a little bit. They're still working through some stuff, so I'm not gonna reveal too much. But like slowly, people are paying more attention. So like it activated like about 15 people to like start going to the meetings, which are agonizing.
Is there a large contingency of let's leave them be, or a large contingency of let's eradicate them?
More in the middle. So there's a couple, and we'll keep this brief. Otherwise, this could be the whole episode. Basically, a few people took over the board. They added a few members so that they had the majority. And basically they were like, let's kill them all. Like, that's just what we're going to do. And a couple people were like, shouldn't we ask what the residents want to do?
What about Georgie? What is Georgie's vote?
She enjoys them.
gets to play with them until they're no longer active.
And then, but anyway, there are other options. Like, they can try to relocate them versus just like, they suffocate them, by the way. So they put carbon monoxide in their little hole and then they fall asleep and die. And there's quite a few of them. But they are, like you said, they're fairly invasive and they're...
Oh, and they breed like crazy.
So there's not a scenario where we shouldn't do anything, but because they'll kill all the vegetation in a certain area unless you put...
And there'll be holes everywhere, mounds and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah. So the bad part was like the board members took over. And then they were like, we don't even care what anyone else in their neighborhood says. Now, they've tried to, they've reeled it back once they realized they fucked up. Because like a lot of people were like, you should try to get our input.
Right.
So anyway, HOA stuff, it's crazy.
So far, my HOA is not a problem because it's like a hired legal firm HOA, and probably until the neighborhood is fully built out.
Right. And ours was that way too.